Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, daddy, blah, blah, blah.
Bird sanctuary runner.
Oh.
Runner.
What's going on with birds?
I don't know, but we left the office door open, and Nina the other day was like, Tony, I think you have a visitor, and she's like, do you have an appointment, sir? And this bird comes hopping in here. And it's flying around the office.
Yeah, and he wanted you to check its poop.
Yeah, he was wanting to check my poop.
Cool.
Check his poop.
All right, we also have Will Schmidt, Hottie Patati. What's going on from the Bay Area?
Hello.
How are you? Hello. Good. Are you missing L.A.?
I miss parts of L.A. I miss
Are we parts? Are we the parts?
Yeah, you're some of the parts.
All right, we made it.
Yay.
Good job, Kenna.
Yay. Always like it when people miss my parts. So we had such an outpouring of alcoholics last week that we are doing a show, a round three on
alcohol. Part three, yeah. We've never done a part three of anything.
I mean, everybody loves alcohol.
Right. So we just, that's going to be the show topic now is just alcohol.
I'm going to write a show instead of Everybody Loves Raymond. Everybody Loves Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
That'd be a good one.
It would be a hit.
If you haven't liked us on Facebook yet, go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all of our show topics that we'll be doing on future shows. You guys can post any questions you want us to cover. And you can also, you know, pitch a show idea.
Yeah, as long as it's about alcohol.
As long as it's about alcohol. There you go.
So this is what really happened is that after we did the show, Nina asked me this question. And I was like, oh, I don't...
This Nina?
Yeah, this Nina there.
Hi, Nina.
She's sitting right there.
Hi, Nina.
You don't have to talk about her. She's sitting right there.
Nina, you want to ask the question yourself?
Okay. No?
She talks through us.
Right, yeah.
She's a mime.
She asked me this question, and I know a lot of stuff. So I was like, well, the answer to that is, I don't know. That's what I came up with. But as I was researching this totally different thing, this popped up, and I was like, holy mackerel, there's the answer to Nina's question.
All right, well, you want me to ask the question, or do you just want people to guess?
I don't remember what it was.
Oh, okay.
But when that happened, then I also looked at the post that we put up in the Facebook group about the alcohol show, and like three or four other people kind of asked questions late, and Rick even added a good one there.
He was like, I forgot out of all the 50 questions I'd asked.
Right, so we'll just do another part. And maybe we can, you know, do this show a little shorter since it's a part three. How many parts you got to do?
Let's make it fast. Okay, Nina, why do Asians get red in the face when they drink?
I don't know.
There we go.
All right, good
Simple.
Job, Nina.
Moving on.
Yeah, so you remember that Will talked last week about how, you know, the capillaries can get dilated. And we talked a little bit about how that can make that face red. And we talked about noses getting all crazy, too. But with this particular thing, they call it the an alcohol flush that is typical in a lot of Asians. Not all Asians. It turns out that there's a specific area of Asia that it seems to be more prevalent. And like areas like Korea, I think Japan was one of those. But there's two enzymes that help break down alcohol in the liver, ADH and then ALDH, which is aldehyde dehydrogenase. So if there's a deficiency in the liver enzyme that's called ALDH2, then it kind of slows the process of breaking down acetaldehyde, and that's what causes that flush. What happens is there's a gene mutation that's pretty common, and the mutation substitutes lysine for glutamic acid, and that reduces the enzyme's ability to convert the acetylalide, which is just a byproduct of alcohol, into acetate. And so the flushing is just a result of an accumulation of acetaldehyde. I keep saying that wrong because it's acetaldehyde.
Sound it out.
It's
acetaldehyde.
Right. And so that's what's causing the flush in the capillaries. But the thing is that it's, you know, a lot of Asians that deal with this don't have it otherwise. Like, they're not just flushing all the time. So it's a good lesson into not all genetic factors are always a problem. Sometimes it's what you introduce that's going to burden the body to a level to where that genetic factor becomes a problem, What do you say about that, Will Schmidt?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's really interesting when we get into, for some of us, it's really interesting when we get into the deeper, like, enzymatic reactions.
Not interesting at all to me.
Okay, thank good. Yeah.
And for other people, it's like, oh, this does not matter at all. But I think a good takeaway to know is that I think in my younger, simpler days, I used to think that, like, most of the diseases could just be alleviated if you just did things right. But sometimes your genetics really do have issues, and like certain foods and certain medications and certain environmental exposures are just not going to work for you no matter what your diet is. So there are real impacts of how, you know, how our genetics can make us more predisposed to having one issue over another. And sometimes we have to make accommodation for that. And other times, there's a lot that we can do to influence our genes, and through that, you know, the epigenetic influence of our environment and our nutrition, we can do a lot, even if we do have genes that are kind of predisposed towards having an issue.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, the advice that they gave for some of these Asians that dealt with this is just to, quote-unquote, practice drinking more, and that can kind of help that. And they also talked about that sometimes that genetic mutation can lead to alcoholism. I didn't understand the reason that they were saying why. That didn't make a lot of sense to me, but it does seem that statistically speaking, that could be a factor as well.
It sounds like that's an opportunity for a bioengineering product. If someone can, you know how sometimes we take milk jest if people can't digest milk just get that one enzyme to help get that. You know, into
process alcohol correctly and more with more
alcohol jest.
Yeah,
create that.
Drunk on is what they call it. That's what they're gonna call it.
I feel like that could be done.
Yeah. All right. We're on that next. All right. Let's go on to see what Rick has to say.
Rick, I've heard that alcohol dehydrates your brain, but that doesn't make sense. Or we'd feel drunk every time we worked out and didn't drink enough water. Good point.
So we did mention some ability of alcohol being a diuretic and certainly causing dehydration issues, especially when someone drinks a lot. So I buy into the fact that alcohol has the ability to dehydrate the brain, but I don't think that that's what causes drunkenness. You know, we talked in the first two episodes about, you know, different causes that alcohol, how it makes us feel drunk or act drunk or all the reactions that it can cause. But I think that the dehydration is just a byproduct of excess drinking. So I don't think it's what's causing the drunkenness. Do you agree there, Will Schmidt?
Yeah, we talked about that. I don't know if it was part one or part two, where we talked about how ethanol, however you want to pronounce it, gets in the way of neurotransmitter function in the brain. And that's what's causing the discoordination and the lack of our normal inhibition and behavior. But it's not the dehydration that's causing that. It's the ethanol in the brain interfering with the neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. And so, that ethanol could be doing that, whether or not alcohol was also a diuretic. So that's where you're getting your drunkenness.
Right. So just because it's a result doesn't mean that it's a cause.
Yeah, there's different reasons. So one thing, it's diuretic, and then another, it's also an intoxicating agent.
Well, man, it seems like Rick's part of the episode is already over.
Like, Rick's trying to get in here. Maybe he should come do the podcast, too.
Probably so, but it seems like we usually have him more in the show, and now we're already done with Rick. I miss him already.
Oh, Rick.
Oh, man.
Well, if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach, Rick, or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
You know what would be awesome is if Rick has never even heard our show.
Yeah.
Like he always comes up with great questions. And he's like, I'm going to get around to it. I just haven't listened yet. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of Game of Thrones on my TiVo, too. I haven't got to that.
Let's see if he's listening. Rick, type in this word, strawberry.
Yeah, next question. Yeah. If you don't include strawberry,
we're going to know you don't listen.
Yeah, right?
Okay. Wilson from Home Improvement. I used to be able to enjoy a few drinks without problem. Last year, a holistic physician put me on progesterone to help correct PCOS, and it wreaked havoc on my body. I am 39 and not premenopausal. I quit taking it after a few months. Since then, my body cannot tolerate alcohol at all. I end up with panic attacks. I would like to be able to enjoy a glass of wine with dinner at least occasionally. There is no recent history of alcoholism in my family, not since my great-grandparents. Is there anything I can do to correct whatever imbalance was caused by the progesterone so my body can tolerate a little alcohol? I have purchased Tony's Digestive Course and am mildly anabolic, but no severe imbalances based on my numbers.
So one thing I'll say is that Wilson is a girl.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of cool. Yeah.
I kind of
like
that.
It's Wilson Phillips.
It could be. I kind of like that name for a girl.
It's cute. Yeah.
I kind of dig it. So there's quite a few things that we could talk about here, and we'll have Will join in too. But, you know, one thing that I will say, and this is, of course, it's not an always situation. Nothing is an always situation. But when I see PCOS or even symptoms of PCOS, that person is almost always leaning to anabolic. It just seems to be one of those situations. And even if you look at the steps that people take to improve PCOS, a lot of those steps we know as steps you would take to push a person more catabolic. So I feel pretty strongly that PCOS is a situation that lives or is at least contributed to by an anabolic imbalance. So that kind of makes sense for some of these things that we're talking about. And we'll have to come back to progesterone a little bit, Will, because, you know, I don't know what your opinion is going to be on this, but I've seen indications to where, like, we look at insulin as a pro-anabolic hormone. But I've seen situations where progesterone could kind of go either way, depending on the person, whether they're, pregnant, it kind of can change up depending on the situation a little bit. So we'll see what your thought is on that. But even if the progesterone was not something that pushed her more anabolic, it could have been anything that did that. But it just seems that if she's having anxiety or panic attacks, we usually see that in a situation where the person is too anabolic. So they're creating too much lactic acid, which is leading to that panic attack. Or they're having spikes and crashes and low mineral levels. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about how that could lead to anxiety or panic attacks?
Sure. So when we see people that have issues with depression or anxiety, as you said, the anabolic imbalance is one cause of that. But then there can also be unstable blood sugar or blood pressure or electrolyte levels. So whenever we drink alcohol and spike our insulin, we'll go through that peak and then that valley where our blood sugar and blood pressure goes too low, especially if you haven't eaten or if you, fall asleep after you drink and your blood sugar just really drops while you're sleeping. And that can cause a really sharp spike in the stress hormones of adrenaline and cortisol. So we can see people have panic attacks sometimes because of that. And then other times when we look at the anabolic imbalance as that doesn't necessarily have to coincide with low blood sugar or electrolyte deficiency. Sometimes people have a panic attack from too much lactic acid being created in their cells, and that's part of the anabolic imbalance, is an errant cellular metabolism. And lactic acid, as I think you've said, several times on past shows, is if you want to give someone a panic attack, you inject them with lactic acid. Like that's a great way to go.
Yeah,
about
it's
it.
Like magic, right?
Yeah. So if your cells are already creating too much lactic acid because of problems with their metabolism and that coincide with the anabolic imbalance, then they'll have a lot more just sort of normal level of lactic acid in their system. It's not normal. It's normal for them, but yeah. it's higher than it should be. And that, that can just make them more predisposed to panic attacks, especially if they then drink on top of that and the alcohol further interferes with normal cellular respiration and slows their breathing, so they just start to accumulate more and more lactic acid, and then they go into a panic attack. Right. I'm not sure personally how that totally connects to progesterone, but I would think that in itself alcohol can contribute to a panic attack in someone who's too anabolic.
Right. My thought is that we're not real big fans on using a lot of hormone therapy, but progesterone seems to be one that has a more of a better place and seems to function better than someone who might be, you know, using estrogen and stuff like that. But in any case, let's come back to that in 1 second. The point I wanted to make to Wilson was, make sure that you don't view that as this doctor broke me by doing this, because you just don't know. It absolutely could have. I mean, there's a lot of things that could go on when you start to mess with hormones, especially if you don't, if you're not really good at it. I don't do any really hormone stuff because I'm not good at it. I don't understand it enough. And there's a lot of people that are taking incorrect steps, but there's a lot of other reasons that these problems could have happened as well. You know, you went in with PCOS, so odds are great that you already had an issue there. And let's look at what alcohol could be doing that's making this worse. Let's say that it is the anabolic imbalance that's creating the panic attacks. If it is, a liquid sugar is going to push you more anabolic in that moment. It's going to push you much further into that imbalance. And if your panic attack is caused by sugar spikes and crashes and low mineral levels, then alcohol would be the captain of creating that scenario, because the liquid sugar is going to create a spike and a crash. And in that crash, it's, you know, lactic acid causes panic attacks, but the spikes and the crash can cause it. Just think of it as the body losing all of its resources at once, and so it kind of freaks out a little bit. It's scared that you're basically going to go into I can't even think of the word right now. I think I'm having a seizure. I couldn't think of seizure because I was like having a seizure.
Yeah, you're so in it.
Right. So I wanted to act out what it did instead of just saying
method.
It. Right. I'm a method actor. So, you know, that's an extreme emergency to the body, and so it creates this anxiety and even panic attacks for individuals. So even if you remove progesterone from this equation altogether, this still could have happened all of a sudden just by your situation becoming worse for one out of a gazillion reasons. Now, if we go back to the progesterone at all, Will, can you think of a reason why that would push somebody either too anabolic or maybe create some type of emergency if they were using too much that might lower resources even more or raise, stress hormones or something?
I mean, I would say, like, because it can act differently in different people, the useful thing to do would be to do the sort of self-test that we recommend to see where is your chemistry being shifted by that. Because it's possible for hormones to be converted into other hormones depending on our own internal chemistry. So as far as...
And to affect other hormones as well.
Also. So I would say, like, a human is such a mixed bag that you got to look and see, like, what are the actual effects of that supplement on your personal chemistry. And I think from there, you could then try to troubleshoot and see, like, oh, like, are you leaning super anabolic, or are you electrolyte deficient, or maybe even you're catabolic, you know? So I would try to, like, ask this person to, like, do your self-test and see where your base body chemistry is. See if getting it into the ideal zones through nutrition then raises your adaptive capacity, because this person's main goal was, like, I want to be able to drink every now and then again. So I don't think there's anything to do. You can't untake the progesterone, but what you can do is work to balance your current chemistry. Or
reduce some burdens and increase your adaptive capacity that way.
Yeah.
So I love how all these people want to drink again. They're like, tell me how I can drink.
Get me back to that day.
You know, one interesting, when you're talking about the self-tests, and Wilson even mentions that she's taken the digestive course and only seems mildly anabolic. An important thing to remember is that we teach just a few simple tests in that course and in the book. And, you know, a big one in that regard is the pHs. Urine and saliva pH are a big marker for whether you're leaning too anabolic or catabolic. But it's not the only marker. And there could be a lot of reasons that someone who is severely anabolic might have pHs that maybe just look a little bit out of balance, or maybe even balanced. And they could have other markers that could show that, wow, this person is likely very anabolic. You know, looking at things like pulse and specific gravity and you know, there's a lot of factors, especially if you're working with a coach, that they could look at even other things beyond those simple measures. So don't view just a couple of little measurements and say, okay, I must be balanced because these two things say so. There's a lot of things to consider. And, you know, symptoms are part of that equation. We really yell at somebody if they decide what imbalance they're dealing just off of symptom. You really got to look at some numbers too, but symptoms do play a part. So do you lean towards constipation? Do you have to take things to keep from being constipated? You know, things like this are important to look at when you're trying to figure out how anabolic am I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it might require further testing, like working with a coach to see, like, if you have sufficient nitrogen in your bloodstream, or if you're accumulating too much ammonia. There's other things where, if, like you're saying, if you look a little bit deeper, and you may need some professional help to look deeper, but it could be worth it, you know. I think you're also right, Tony, to point out, like, the person already, they came to this holistic physician or holistic practitioner with PCOS. So you know they had some major body chemistry imbalances going into that. And sometimes when we make changes to our protocol, we blame the change that we made and forget about the problem that we came into it with.
Right.
Like for example, I had one client who had she had her parathyroids removed. Like, she had, like, there's tumors growing in three out of four of the gland spaces. And she had like a lifetime of constipation issues and skin issues and other things. She was like a very fit person, but she had these problems. And then I had her start taking some HCL, and she got super, super bloated from it. It's like, oh, well, you probably have all this bacteria in her stomach. It's like, it's not appropriate for your stomach to have such an intense reaction to HCL because it should be acidic. But with
I should be making HCL anyway, so one capsule should not create havoc.
Yeah, it should not be a problem. But she thought it spun her into this whole other she thought it gave her SIBO.
Right.
She literally, because she's like, I didn't have any of these bloating issues before I started taking HCL. I was like, well, you weren't healthy before. Like, you had like this severe like thyroid cancer, you know, and skin issues, and you were like crazy constipated. Like, you were not okay before this, you know? So when she started, even though it was a right step for her, she needed to take like D-limonene and other antimicrobials, but she sort of blamed the HCL for all these other problems that were there. So it's possible that progesterone didn't actually create like an alcohol allergy so much as like other things that complicated her system over time.
Right. And you never know what else this practitioner may have suggested. Like, well, you need to give up animal meat and just eat vegetables. And maybe that increased the amount of starches that she was consuming and pushed her even more anabolic that way. There's a gazillion different things that could have been a factor in this. And this is not to defend or suggest that anyone use progesterone if you don't know what you're doing. That's not what we're doing at all here. We're just saying that that may not have been what really drove you deeper into this situation.
Yeah, and it might have, but it's also important to not blindly think just because you did that at the same time that for sure it was the progesterone at fault.
Today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from Audible.com.
Audible.com.
Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
Okay.
All right, Roxanne, our last question in this show. And nobody can ever
until
have another.
Until part four. Yeah. Until part four for alcohol.
Part 67, alcohol. Before I fixed my digestion, I used to drink a lot of wine. Convinced myself it was because I liked it so much, like Kenna. Aw, thanks, Roxanne. LOL. But realized now it was because I was getting energy from the sugars in it. Now I can drink just one glass on occasion and not want to pound the entire bottle. Grin emoticon and stop bragging. Looking back, I can really see how drinking that much was pounding me into the ground. Again, so thankful I found you guys. Now I can use all that saved money on clothes and beat flow. Grin emoticon.
Right, so it is nice for someone to see that improvement also, and also to just kind of notate how much Kenna likes to drink.
Yeah. I hear other listeners have also been concerned about my drinking.
It's really funny because Kenna jokes about it so much, and we have had people at, you know, group parties that we've had who listen to the show come up and be like, Kenna, I'm really concerned about your drinking, and she's not even drinking at the party kind of thing, and it's really kind of fun.
But then after that, I sneak into the bathroom.
Uh-huh. And I drink. Yeah, she just does it on her own. Uh-huh. DL. Yeah. I love how Roxanne also typed out the word grin emoticon.
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to just start saying smile or laugh.
Yeah, smile emoticon, crying smile. Emoticon, champagne bottle.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at what Roxanne says is that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of times people will view their cravings or what they really love as just a personality situation. They just feel like, oh, I just love wine. I can't live without it. But then, when you give the body what it really needs, all of a sudden they're not screaming for wine. It can still be an enjoyment on an occasion, but it's not this need that they had that made them feel like they were alive.
Mm.
So do you want to go over why wine can have that ability, Will, for maybe first-time listeners who are on part three by now?
I mean, the alcohol addiction, like, that's a real chemical thing. Like, people can get themselves hooked on that, and then there's a couple different sort of actual chemical dependencies that'll keep us there. But sometimes people, like, they really like it because it helps calibrate their nervous system a little bit. Sometimes people run cold and it helps supply their body with more heat. So when you do the work to correct your digestion and create stable blood sugar and just have more energy in your body, then our need for supplemental, like the processed metabolites that the yeast has made for, like, into alcohol, some of those substrates are things that our body should be naturally producing on its own, like to keep our bodies warm. So the better that we can do our own work to create those substrates ourselves through proper metabolism, the less dependent we become on those other, like, alcohol supplements to keep ourselves
right, a supplement
warm
of alcohol
or relaxed. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we see is that, you know, especially if they're having those, you know, unstable sugar levels, that if they can raise their mineral levels, usually by fixing digestion so the body can pull more minerals out of the food, or maybe, you know, using sea salt, taking the steps to raise those mineral levels, then you get more of a buffer. So when you get those spikes and crashes in sugar, they don't hit you so hard and they don't scream, "There's wine right over there, you idiot. Go get it." So a person can stay a little bit more on an even keel, and that can help them, you know, not have those cravings like they did before, kind of like what we see happen with Roxanne.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Wow.
Nailed
it. Okay. Roxanne, if you ever want to have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. Or head on over to Will Schmidt, mybodyofknowledge.net. He's got a lot of great pain relief videos and blogs and all kinds of great information, and I'm sure half-naked pictures.
What if somebody had their middle name, like their last name, like three times like that? Like it was Will Schmidt.
God.
That'd be awesome.
All right.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
For part 17 of Alcohol.